The following may contain graphic content. Listener discretion is advised.
Yeah, 313 urgent, and I have one in custody. R3 Stabby Radio.
Mr. Amal with a gun, jump into a vehicle, Alpha Bravo.
Female went to the shop saying she was just held up at knife point.
I'm Natalie O'Brien. This is Police Tape Blue Sirens.
I had to ring my mum and tell her I couldn't come home for Christmas. So she very kindly made me a Christmas pudding. So I spent Christmas Day with a lot of security and Carl and George Williams. I cooked a turkey. We made do with whatever we had, which included mum's Christmas pudding. So it was a couple of days later, I think it was in the papers. I think it was front page of the Herald Sun, and my mother rang me furious saying, "I hope you didn't have any of my pudding." So she wasn't very happy when I told her that Carl didn't want any, but George thought it was lovely.
Detective Senior Sergeant Sarah Morse is attached to the Sexual Crimes Squad with Victoria Police. She has worked in the Fraud Squad and on the high-profile Piranha Task Force, investigating the notorious gangland killings. Sarah has interrogated killers, dug up dead bodies and delved into the high-profile double homicide of Terence and Christine Hodson. Her persistence in hunting the killer of infamous organised crime figure Graham the Munster Kinnebrough led her and her team to crack another cold case and discover the murder suspect wasn't missing, he was 6 foot under.
I was 16 when I saw my cousin's marching out parade, and that's when I decided that that's what I wanted to do. When I went to apply when I left school, my parents said, "No, you can't do that. We've just spent all this money on your education." So when I finished uni, then I went to apply again and they said, "No, we just spent more money on your education." So I was working part-time at Target and that just became my full-time job while I set about applying behind their back, really. So finally I joined in, 99, and eventually I think they're happy now that with what I do. They used to say, tell all their friends, "Oh no, Sarah's going to become a prosecutor and do law," which was never true, but I think they just felt like, oh, it wasn't enough that I would just be, in the police force. But now I think they can see why I love it. They are proud of me now. Yep.
So when you first went into fraud, what was it like?
It's so slow because there's no time pressure with anything. Most of those crimes are quite historical. They've always been completed. Fraud is a really difficult crime because although there is a paper trail, it's really detail focused. And you've got to have somebody who's happy to come into work and sit at a desk every day. I realised that wasn't for me. So they did a revamp of the whole crime department and you could apply for any position. And I just applied for a task force position and I went to my inspector and said, "I think I'm going to apply to go to sex crimes." And he said to me, "Well, I'm about to start up a task force investigating the Hodson murders." And he showed me Carl Williams' statement and he said, "Would you like to come with me to that task force?" And I said, "Yes, right now." And he said, "Well, you should probably go home and talk about it with your partner," or, I was seeing a policeman then, and I said, "I don't really care what he says. I'm going to come anyway." And so he said, "Okay." And then I went home and told my partner, who was furious. He said, "That's a terrible decision. No one, you'll have no friends in Victoria Police if you go to this task force. It's a terrible decision. You should ring them up and tell them no." So I stayed in the task force. I got rid of him.
What was it that attracted you to this investigation? Was it Carl Williams' statement?
It was really compelling. He obviously, at the time, he decided to give information about all of the murders he'd been involved in. The Hodson murders was so important because it really did look like the only underworld murder that the police were unable to solve.
Terence and Christine Hodson were shot dead in their Kew home in 2004. Mr. Hodson had been helping police.
Crime boss Carl Williams was a convicted murderer and drug trafficker and a central figure in the gangland slayings that gripped Melbourne.
The Morans thought of Carl Williams as a bit of a lightweight, and they thought, like they thought of many people, that they could bully him.
Carl was a lady at the start, and then it suddenly dawned on everyone, I think probably me first, that Carl had balls.
He doesn't bow to people, Carl. He treats people how they treat him, but he won't be bossed by people. He knows no people bossing people.
The killings began after Williams was shot by another underworld figure, Jason Moran.
G'day, Mark. Hey, Jason. we're losing thousands of dollars.
You're pure pressure.
Shouldn't even get it over and done with. Come on.
I'm not killing him.
Rotation!
Williams survived the shooting, but his attempted murder sparked a lengthy killing spree. Williams pleaded guilty to the payback murder of Jason Moran and his father Lewis, and another crime figure. He was serving three life sentences for murder and conspiracy to commit a fourth murder when he struck a deal with police to give information on a number of other unsolved murders. Sarah was given the job of taking his statements.
That all occurred just before Christmas, which was a really interesting time because obviously there's, you know, everybody wants to go on leave. So I rapidly had my leave cancelled. I had to ring my mum and tell her I couldn't come home for Christmas. So she very kindly made me a Christmas pudding for me, even though she didn't know where I was going to be. So I was ended up spent Christmas Day with a lot of security and Carl and George Williams. I cooked a turkey. We made do with whatever we had, which included mum's Christmas pudding. So it was a couple of days later, I think, and it was in the papers. I think it was front page of the Herald Sun, and my mother rang me furious saying, "I hope you didn't have any of my pudding." So she wasn't very happy when I told her that Carl didn't want any, but George thought it was lovely. So we had laid charges, but obviously when Carl Williams was killed in prison, well, that then meant that our informant was gone. That meant the withdrawing of all these charges. Oh, it was a strange day for me because I was appearing on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Oh, you know, they knew that I was a police officer. And so Eddie McGuire kept asking me in the break, "Have you heard what's happened? Have you heard what's happened?" And then he was asking all these questions and I thought, I can't tell him that that's actually where I work or anything like that. I just remember sitting there thinking, they've locked my phone away and I can't talk to anyone and find out. But, you know, he told me about Carl being killed. So I was devastated.
What was it that inspired you to go on to that program?
I just really like trivia. Even the application process is interesting. You know, they put a camera on you and say, tell us a funny story. You know, there's a bit of, you've got to think on your feet a bit, so I don't mind it. So I tell a story that I always tell when I first joined Victoria Police, that I was in a car with two other police members and a job came over the radio about a man with an axe who'd broken into a house in St Kilda. And I was brand new in the job and I remember thinking, we're driving towards this. This is amazing. We're not running away. That's a man with an axe. And when we got there, we realised and spoke to the victim, they'd got it wrong. It was a man with an accent. And so I realised then every single job you get in Victoria, when you're driving around on the van, nothing is ever what it seems. And so that has, you know, rung true for me forever.
Blewett was a violent armed robber who picked sides in the gangland war. He was an ally of Carl Williams and also a person of interest over the killing of Graham Kinnebrough.
Career criminal and underworld assassin Terence Blewett was linked to three of Melbourne's gangland murders. He was also at the centre of an armed robbery and the shooting of a security guard in Sydney. Then he vanished and it appeared he got away with murder, almost. Sarah and her team, hot on the trail of the killer of Graham Kinnebrough, stumbled onto fresh evidence about Blewett.
So as part of my investigation into the Graham Kinnebrough murder, which was when I was a detective sergeant at Piranha, we really needed to find the shooter for the Kinnebrough murder, we believed was Terence Blewett, who disappeared not long after the murder of Graham Kinnebrough. Terence Blewett was nowhere to be found. So we went back and reinvestigated his disappearance and we were able to determine that he was shot in Mulwala and then transported to Victoria and buried in Thomastown. So it took us a very long time to do that, but it was the most rewarding thing to be able to convince my bosses that we needed to hire a very big digger after I'd already dug a lot of holes all over Yarrawonga thinking he was up there. So sort of 12 months later, I convinced the boss that, no, I think I really know where he is this time. So there was a great amount of pressure. So we took our digger out to Thomastown and dug a very big hole for a day and we still hadn't found him. And then we kept digging the next day. We still hadn't found him.
Police are digging under a shed for the remains of career criminal Terence Blewett, who vanished 9 years ago. It's believed finding his body could help them solve the murder of gangland identity Graham Kinnebrough.
So I ordered an aerial photograph that was taken not long after Terence went missing, and we were able to line up the rooftops and move the digger into place, and we found a trench, and so we kept digging, and we realised that this was actually a human body-sized trench. He was buried 3 metres deep. And my boss had rung me and said, right, well, you know, I told him we found the trench, and he said, stop digging. You need to put a guard on it, put tarps over it, come back tomorrow. And I thought, oh, there's no way I'm doing that. So we kept digging, and I had to ring him back and say, oh, I didn't get a chance to tell the digger driver to stop in time. So, we did wait. He dug up the skeleton of Terence Blewett in the hole. He was obviously still in his clothes that he was wearing at the time. So he had a balaclava on, this sort of thing. But obviously over the time when having been buried, there was nothing left of his body. He was only bones. So he was gradually excavated out of that hole, and they had recovered 97% of his body and laid him out as a skeleton. They could tell that there was a gunshot that had come from the back to the front, so that he had been shot in the back. So that was, inconsistent with that. We knew he had other injuries. We were able to account for all of those. So this one, he'd been shot before when he was fleeing prison. So this was a new injury. So they were able to say that, yes, that he'd been shot in the back.
A tip-off from an underworld source led the Piranha Task Force to the one-time dump. 3 metres underground, they found the skeleton of Terence Blewett.
What actually happened to Mr. Blewett is now, what I believe, is a murder investigation.
So even though his family were quite happy to know, they knew that he'd gone missing, and until they were told otherwise, they were happy to believe that he was living on a beach in Thailand somewhere. But at the same time, they knew something untoward had happened, because he didn't go home for his mother's funeral, and, you know, he was always very close with his family. So they actually did think that something had gone wrong, but we were able to, you know, to return Terry to them. So for me, you know, to find somebody who'd been buried for so long, that was extremely rewarding.
How long did it take for you to solve both of those murders, I guess? And what was the turning point?
I guess it was a 5-year... We were really struggling to progress the Kinnaburra murder investigation, so that's when we did focus on the Blewett investigation. We had a lot of phone data. We really relied on what the investigators historically had done, if they had obtained phone records, because phone records aren't kept for a long time. We were really reliant on what they had done in those days. So we knew, when we focused on the Blewett murder, we knew that on the day that Terence Blewett went missing, the last day he was heard of, there was a real lot of phone traffic between a witness and our main suspect. And so we didn't know who that witness was, though. I had a brand new detective, or training detective, so she's a constable, and I just said, can you find out what you know about this person? And within half an hour, she found calls to Crime Stoppers that had been made.
Sarah is now working in the Sexual Crime Squad at a time when Melbourne has suffered some horrific sex and murder crimes. Her workday involves dealing with such heinous acts, she can't talk about her work outside the office.
When someone says, how was your day? And you say, oh, you'll never guess what, and, you know, be halfway through a story and then see the look of complete horror on somebody's face when you realise, oh, I can't even in vague terms describe what I've heard today. You know, it is amazing. The people who do that work are astonishing. You know, I really just supervise people doing that work. I really don't know how they do it. And they have such an interest in doing it well.
And Melbourne has certainly had a string of horrible sex crimes.
Yeah, definitely.
Of late.
We've had several recently that have involved where the victim has then been murdered. So those naturally go straight to the homicide squad. Yeah, I'm constantly astonished at the amount of just young women who will be preyed upon. It just, that breaks my heart. You know, I've got a 12-year-old stepdaughter, and I think for her to navigate, you know, the world, you know, I would never want to tell her, well, you shouldn't go out and go drinking. But at the same time, you just feel that need to protect people. So, yeah, I'm horrified at what goes on. People who just help themselves to somebody, it's appalling.
How do you deal with that every day?
I don't know, because I think if you do think about it, you become so sad about the human race. You know, you could easily become really despondent about it. So I've told my husband, you know, just in general terms about some of this. And he becomes so sad about men. But I don't know, because I think if you focus on it too much, you would never leave your house. Like, it's a sad thing. And ultimately, most people are going to be harmed or be offended against by people they know. So we at the Sexual Crime Squad, we do all the investigations into where the offender is unknown. The victim might not be able to identify, might not recall. So we reliant on CCTV and things like that. So it is certainly very difficult. But yeah, like I say, the investigators we have are amazing. So it's completely different work to investigating sex crimes at a local level where people are offending against people they know. But yeah, it certainly starts, you know, the net is cast so wide at the start. We need to look for, yeah, it is CCTV and phone records, things like that. CCTV that people have and are willing to share is always fantastic. As well, we rely on, say, in-car CCTV. It might be someone's dash cam or a taxi cam. But we also find that people now, offenders, are actually really quite savvy when it comes to avoiding that. They might leave their phone at home. You know, they might be more forensically aware, definitely.
What sort of qualities do you need to be a detective? And are women good at it?
I would say definitely women are good at it. Yeah, it's that methodical and thoughtful, as well as that level of empathy as well, because that sort of helps with dealing with witnesses, especially recalcitrant witnesses. So I had dealt with a problematic witness who had refused to go into WITSEC. He decided that he would rather that I should look after him instead. So we relocated him and I managed him, and he was nothing short of problematic every day. He would send me a picture of a noose he had made and say that he was going to kill himself. You know, he would write letters to the defence saying that he had made everything up, and then he would send them to me saying, I'm going to send that. He just constantly drove me insane, and I think that would have been really easy to say, this is not worth it. So, you know, every time he writes one of those letters or sends a photo of a noose, you know, and a copy of the receipt saying, "This is, I used the money you gave me to buy, you know, food to buy the rope to make this noose," that was exhausting for me. And it would have been easy to say, no, that's enough. I just can't do this. But, you know, I was able to convince him to calm down, pull his head in. He, you know, he's in a great place now, and we laugh about what he did to me. But at the time, I was, you know, I was getting advice. How do I deal with him? He's really unwell. You know, I need help dealing with him. I need someone to help me. So I was able to ask for help.
If you could talk to people who are thinking about taking on policing as a career, what would you tell them?
I would thoroughly recommend to anyone, especially if you're a woman out there thinking about joining. Victoria Police is a completely different place to what it was when I joined in 99, you know, and I think about the women who worked, who were groundbreaking, the women who worked before us. I think about what they endured, and I think, wow, we're only becoming better.
Next time on Police Tape Blue Sirens, I speak to FBI-trained criminal profiler Chris Illingsworth.
The investigators would come to me and say, what do you think, Chris? Have you got it yet? I'd say, no, it's not here. Keep going. And then this one just stopped me in my tracks, and I went, wow, there are two questions here answered completely different to anyone else. So I said, this guy, it's him. And they got the DNA tested and it turned out to be him. But in the meantime, he was so nervous about the whole thing, he came into the police station and confessed.
That's on the next episode of Police Tape Blue Sirens. I'm Natalie O'Brien. For more information on what you've heard on this podcast, go to truecrimeaustralia.com.au.